This is the PMP Industry Insider Podcast. You're hearing from Cole March and Triangle Pest Control's Donnie Shelton and PCO Bookkeepers, PCO M&A Specialist, and TurfBook's Dan Gordon, as well as some of the biggest players in the pest control and lawn care industries. We're talking about what is changing in the industry and taking you straight to the front lines of what the future holds. If you're ready to grow your pest control or lawn care business, you're in the right place.
Welcome, everyone, back out to the PMP Industry Insider Podcast, where we look at what's changing in the industry and we take you to the front lines with those that are driving those changes in the industry. Thank you for joining for another edition today. I am Donnie Shelton, your host, owner of Triangle Pest Control, as well as Cole March, which offers digital marketing and sales services for the home services industry with a specific focus. There we go. I'm going to have some fun today already. I'm already starting for Pest and Lawn, and I have my partner in crime, Mr. Dan Gordon. Dan, do you want to say hi to everyone?
Hello, everyone. Glad to be here. Dan Gordon, PCO Bookkeepers. Obviously, accounting services, exit planning services, consulting, and just a true happy guy in the industry.
Love anyway. That. All right. Well, as you all know, this podcast is focused on growing your business, whether you're just getting started or you're trying to get your business to the next level. And of course, Dan and I are both business owners ourselves. We both have a ton of time in the industry, and today we're going to be talking about leveraging growing your business really through leveraging industry associations. And Dan, we have a super guest with us today, Mr. Scott Steckel. Would you like to just introduce him briefly to our audience?
Sure. Really excited about having Scott here, especially right after Pest World, and talk about some of the things that NPMA is offering. He's president of NPMA, and really looking forward to that, and also looking forward to discussing how virtual Pest World went. I can tell you that I didn't have high expectations, and I was blown away. I really, really enjoyed it. So anyway, Scott, welcome, and
thank you.
Let's roll.
All right, I'm here with you.
Okay. All right. So tell us about your background, you know, how you got started, what made you decide to climb the ladder at NPMA and your own business and whatnot, and how did it all begin?
Sure. So there's a few of us in the industry, that have family orientation here. So I'm third generation in the business. So my grandfather and father's kind of built that path. As a child, was involved in the industry. And then, as funny it would take it, like, all right, well, I really have this kind of bent, and Donnie and I have this kind of kindred spirit here. I went into the military right out of high school. So I went to the Air Force Academy to college, and then became a pilot in the Air Force for a number of years following that.
I didn't know.
I'm a KC-135 guy.
Oh, my gosh.
Same time you did.
Hang on. So not only did you fly the same airplane I flew, you went to the academy.
I did.
All right. We may have to do something this podcast. I don't know. I'm joking. No, that's awesome, man. That's impressive. I didn't know. That's funny.
I mean, I knew that you were from you all. All right. I didn't realize that I'd done that. Yeah. All right. Nonetheless, various backgrounds in the military. So Air Force pilot kind of thing. My dad had a heart attack. And of course, as family would kind of come first, I asked my wing commander, because it was just one of those things, what do you do, boss? And he's like, hey, family comes first. You can always be a guardsman in your local community and still fly in the tanker community, because Rickenbacker in Columbus, Ohio, which is where I live, has that. And I'm like, great, let's make that happen. So anyway, got back into Columbus, bought a small business, that was in pest control, and then merged into a larger business called Varmint Guard. And that's where most everybody is known for me for 25 years or so that I've been an owner in the Varmint Guard business. I had a couple partners in that realm, and we'd grown the business When I say grown, we've kind of become a multi-state regional player, but certainly under the $10 million range. So it was not a high volume business. It was a regional size business, if you will. And then the interesting thing in 2008, got a real great opportunity, got invited into the Copesan network. And that's when literally the connections changed, the insights to the world and how you run your business changed. And we started a real rapid growth, if you will. Up to that point, we were probably 90% residential and obviously 10% commercial. And at that point, grew dramatically in the commercial space because we'd not really touched into the national accounts at all. And then all of a sudden, national accounts started to come our way. And then we figured out how to do commercial a lot better than we had before and grew that to the point where in the 2017 timeframe, which is when we did sell to Plunkett's, we were about 50-50 commercial and residential and on the north end of $7 million. So we had a great ride, loved it, wanted to stay in the industry, but I had a couple partners that decided, you know what, it's time for them to put their saddles up. And we kind of the disadvantage of being a small business owner and privately owned is that you don't have deep pockets. So all of a sudden now I need to buy out three partners. Well, I don't have $8 million to buy, and the company can't afford to, from the size perspective, run cash flow to pay three owners more than the value of the business. Anyway, so that became a non-issue. And so that's where we are today. Landed with Plunkett's as a private to private sale. So that's kind of the answer as to how I got here. And I'll let the
Were your partners family members or just outside?
No. So that's the other unique thing in the merge of this is that I had a husband and wife team, Jim and Sandy Vave. They, of course, are family. And then John Livingston and myself, two other non-family partners. So there were a total of – and then Jerry Wegner at the time as well. So the fifth partner that I did kind of talk about. But those – five of us were all literally not at all related. Now, how do we find each other? Go back one generation. Right. They worked for my father at Torco. And so I had been an employee, now a teenage employee, but I'd known Jim Babe and I'd known John Livingston as they were employees, technicians, and salespeople at the Torco company. So it was kind of a friendship relationship of, well, how do I run my businesses with you?
So,
go ahead.
Interesting. Okay. So I guess it was time for them to exit. You didn't necessarily want to exit. And so it was time
correct.
To explore possibilities. And we'll later on in the broadcast, we'll talk about some of the decisions you went through, but definitely wanted to talk about NPMA and big questions. So I'm a guy in the industry just starting out. Why would I join NPMA? What are the advantages?
As an ultra small business, and I was there, right? I bought a company that literally was two employees, the owner and one technician. And so there was just two of us. I joined because I wanted to get to understand one of the things that had popped up. One of the people at Dow, at that time Dow Elanco, so the Centricon product, if you will, came to me and said, Scott, you got to learn how to work on your business, not in your business. And I'm like, I am in the weeds, running technician round, sales, doing all the billing. I mean, you name it. As a small business
owner, really unique in doing that, by the way. No one does that.
So it was, I went to my first NPMA event with my father, and I'm like, wow, there are people that are actually willing to share with me what they do, their secret sauces, their fundamental business habits. And I'm like, these are really kind of interesting. One of the problems was I brought back too many things, and all of a sudden I'm like, I'm drowning in all these changes I want to make. Anyway, it was a great opportunity as a young person to kind of understand what path I should take with my business. Because at that point, I had no idea. I mean, I'm just running a business. I don't think of the long term. I'm thinking of what's right in front of me. It's the fire that I'm putting out today. Go ahead.
So I guess there's three questions. So if I'm just starting out, why should I join? If I've reached $1 million, what's in it for me? If I'm over $5 million, why do I stay a member? So
and again, as you grow, one of the things that you discover is that you don't have, at least I didn't have systems in place. And then all of a sudden you're sitting in this NPMA conference and somebody next to you kind of talks about, well, I have this process in place. And I'm like, that's a cool process. I got to implement that. You do what now? And you sales, my gosh. And it's like, whoa, most primary business owners are just about, I only want myself. I don't want another employee because that's a headache. Well, I got to get past, if I'm going to grow, I got to get past bringing on more people than me. So I got to delegate. And then the second step is I got to have a process so that I can't walk down the road and my pricing is different than the next guy's pricing. Well, we got to have a price guide. Well, what's that? Et cetera, et cetera. And then by the time you're at the 5 million point, you're like, oh, really? Contracts are important? And because you're lopsided, you are really building based on you're chasing the next lead in the sales cycle. And it's all about, if you think of now, I'm going to go back 20 years and this didn't exist, but now it's like, oh, I'm going to buy leads. So the pay per clicks, and it's all about one-time services. And you're like chasing. It's this hamster wheel that goes, and you're like, well, the winter time, oh God, we slow down. Well, now what do I do? So it's that $5 million point. Well, all of a sudden you're like, the light bulb comes on. Oh, I got to reinvent my business. And I got to stop worrying about the specials, the one-time services. It'll come. I got to go after, and I got to build the model for everybody selling. So it's, we have to become a selling machine. In other words, it's not about I'm a technician and I can't sell. Everybody's got to sell. Office staff, owner, technician, everybody. And I got to build this platform. So for the long haul, if I'm 5 million, I'm going to be 10 someday. Well, I got to put things in place to make sure that I have contractual obligations. I want to build this business for the long haul. So those are the kind of the three stories, if you will.
I was going to say, Scott, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think the connections that you make as a member of the association, I mean, they're just invaluable for the growth of your business. You know, the other thing that I think is really important that folks really think about, and I especially saw it here in North Carolina, is there was a service tax that came along, and NPMA was very involved in helping us avoid that as an industry. Now, would it eventually come? Probably so. But just the fact that there's an advocate for the industry, I mean, I think all of us benefit, from what NPMA does kind of on the regulatory side and just representing the industry. Do you want to talk a little bit about, because I think that's really important. And I think it's important that we all have the perspective that, hey, we all play in the same pool. And we need to make sure that, you know, it's sustainable for the long term. You want to talk a little bit about as far as what NPMA does there?
Sure. So if you will go back, and I'm just going to go experientially, 25, 30 years ago, when I first joined, you just hired a lobbyist, and the lobbyist was the professional person going out and finding the local state legislators. And then you went to the Hill once a year at legislative day and visited your senators and congresswomen, men and women. And that's completely turned on its head now. It's all about grassroots. It's about us walking and meeting and supporting our local legislators, visiting with them in their local home territories, not just in Washington, not just at the state house. But we can't be at all places all the time, so we can't know all the subjects. The NPMA staff, so Ashley on the national level and Jake on the state level, have really done a great job of getting the word out as to what are the things that are going on that are going to affect us, and then which side should we be advocating for? Because sometimes we don't even know what the topic really means. So they've helped us clarify what's important to us. And then the second piece is we've created a SPAR program. So think of it as the local advocate. So it's a PMP in the local market that has a steadfast relationship with their legislature. And so they can walk in and everybody there knows them. And so they're the go-to people when something pops up and it's a bed bug issue or it's a lawn care issue that relates to service industry. And so the sales tax issue you referred to, all those things, they bring us to the table and just ask us, So how's that going to impact you? And then we can kind of clarify what it is that we're trying to share.
Nice.
So what for somebody like you, what made you, you know, get on the ladder and climb the leadership ladder? And
it's all the bonuses. It's all the bonuses that he got.
So the reality is
a lifelong pension.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, reminder, it's voluntary. You got paid nothing. I guess the simple point is this. I'm a really active, involved person. I'm probably on more committees than anybody else as a PMP member. And the reason for that is because I'm just curious. I want to understand how my business operates, and I know that I'm not the person that knows anything. So because of that, I'm going to sit at the right hand of the experts and listen and get guidance and hear what the important piece is, and then get more clarification, and then, let me implement that into my business. So, and so at this point, it was kind of one of those, I went from committee to committee to committee, and I stayed active. Sometimes it was just by a phone, and so general meetings by telephone, and then some were active where I went every time we had one of those three, Legislative Academy, and then the Pest World. One of these days, oops, surprise, Scott, tap on the shoulder, would you be the chairperson? Okay, I'd be happy to do that. And that's the second piece that I think is really a really important piece to this is where we cut our teeth on how to lead. Because it's not easy to run your own business, but you really have a small view of the world when you're looking at your own business in your own territory. It's not until you sit in this committee role where you're like, I've got committees in Northwest Washington State. I've got some in California. I got some in New York, and California and New York, they act totally different than Ohio. This is important for me to understand how others are kind of, what situations they're dealing with, because Ohio, frankly, is a pretty lenient state from a regulatory point of view. So anyway, it's the opportunity to kind of learn how to lead outside of your own network. And it's a practice realm, right? I'm an infinite learner for me. I can't end the day without finding something new. And this is another opportunity for getting that new insight.
Okay. Excellent. Hey, tell us about the Leadership Network community. I was on the website looking at everything.
I think the simplest answer is this. If you have a desire to do self-improvement, if you have a desire to learn with others, really network, because that's the simplest word for it. This is that network. This is that conduit. It is, if you go back one generation, it was called LDG, Leadership Development, and it was really built for the next generation. So it wasn't for the business owner, the 35-year-old and older person. It was for their children. It was for their senior managers. And we discussed that recently and said, you know, we're missing the boat. That's really not who we're after. We're after anybody, business owner that's 50 years old and just entered the industry. We're after those business owners that want to mentor and share their experience that may be 55 and that have had years of experience. We're not going to try to limit it to just the younger group anymore, because this is the time where we can all share.
Yeah, it's an interesting group. They've asked me to present several times, and it's a terrific, anybody who's kind of new to the industry, or even if you're not new to the industry, just kind of get in, and there's a lot of learning that goes on and a lot of networking, and a lot of people are your age, and you'll grow up in the industry, you know.
So yep. One of the other things I have seen recently as well within PMA, and again, you know, the goal behind the podcast here is, okay, I am an owner, I'm an operator, I may be a member of the association, I may not be, my level of engagement may or may not be very, very strong. If you've not been to NPMA's website, npmpestworld.org, and the Resource Center, it is just amazing. I mean, there's online training resources, there's technical resources, business resources, there's, of course, operating ratios. I mean, there's just so much there that could help you in your business. Can you talk a little bit about how that came about? I know this is a little off script here, but I mean, no, I've just, yeah. I've been over and looking, I mean, man, I wish when I started there was something like this. I mean, the support here is just amazing, you know, model contracts, those types of things. So you want to talk about Absolutely. That a little bit?
Sure. So I guess the simplest answer is many years ago, when it first started, NPMA literally was trying to figure out, well, we're not going to be educators year round. And now that's changed. We are going to be educators year round. And we're going to start, well, the platform isn't digital. Well, now it's digital. And so I think everybody's coming to further clarification that it's not necessarily where we're going to get CEU credits only. Sometimes it's about what I call burst learning or short-term learning. It's the quick, hey, I need to figure out how to do this. And all of a sudden now, let me find that resource. Well, as we know, YouTube now, you can find anything out there. Well, that's kind of what our industry is kind of leaning into is like, well, how do we provide the learning when the technician needs it most? And so that we started years ago. Okay, so go back to, well, I don't understand how to build my chart of accounts for accounting, back to Dan's specialty. So there were literally ratio that surveys put out, and it was hilarious. They were all over the board. Well, Dan will explain why, because everybody had all the expenses put in different buckets. So you never got the same answer from any two companies because they weren't in the same category. Somebody put travel under meals and entertainment, and somebody put travel under travel and blah, blah. I mean, it just was one of those things where we weren't getting apples to apples comparison. So that's another piece is we started to collaborate and start to get, well, we have to have common answers to be able to help those that are starting this business to give them open insight, right? The simple answer is, in this industry, there is no secret sauce. We yeah. all provide service. We know that if you come and visit me, you're going to take away a multitude of points, but you can't mimic exactly me. So I'm not worried about you coming and visiting because you will walk away and be you when you leave. But you'll implement some pieces of me. That's great.
Excellent. Excellent. So big elephant in the room. From your perspective, how did Virtual Pest World go? I know that I said before I thought it was outstanding. What? Tell me about your perspective.
Well, I'm going to go back again. I've done this a bunch today. Go back 2 months. So back into the June, July, summertime, we're like, oh, are we really going to be able to meet in Nashville? Then come July, August, well, nope, Nashville's closing down. Okay, and then we put a survey out, and our vendors and our speakers all came back clearly. 80% of them or more said, no travel for us. So we're like, oh, well, I guess that tells us the story. And so we put the same survey out to the PMPs, and you would have guessed, it's all over the board. Like, I am going to go no matter what. And others were like, you're crazy if I'm going to go. And so we're like, okay, well, that didn't help me at all. So the PMPs didn't give us any advice. It was just the vendors and the speaker community that clearly shared, okay, this is the path we've got to go. We can't have a hybrid where we're going to have face-to-face. And it was just too divided. We needed to make it simple, and we had a short time frame to do it. So result, we have about 80% of the normal vendors participate, and the 20% that didn't, feedback was, we couldn't pivot fast enough. It's a very digital environment, and we're a face-to-face company. We don't have much digital content to share. We're just going to have to bow out, and we'll participate. We'll go, but we're going to go learn how to do it in case this happens again.
I got to tell you, as a vendor, we were the latter. Okay, we didn't have the digital stuff, but I know when I go to face-to-face Pest World, I spend a ton of money transporting, bringing people and everything else. So Absolutely. Take some of that money and create some of those digital resources to put in your digital booth. And that's what we did. So,
Yep. So then the second is PMP audience. Well, as you might expect, having an audience of about half the normal number, it was disappointing, certainly from the heartfelt of, there was a lot of effort put by staff to create the platform, to create the content. The speakers gave all their efforts, all the vendors gave all their effort, and to have the volume not as high I mean, our typical numbers are in the 1600 to 2500 PMP range, and we were in the 700, 900 range, depending on the day. Now, the platform, everybody that participated really found it enjoyable.
Cool.
For me, for example, and so Mr. Social, yeah, everybody knows that. I can't walk down an aisle in the exhibit hall and get through it because everybody's tapping me on the shoulder. Hey, Scott, how are you? So I'm shaking hands. I'm getting deep into the conversation. And then it's time and I got to go back to the classroom. And I'm like, dang, I didn't get anywhere today. Well, in this environment, I literally got through. I talked to every vendor. And I thought that was kind of cool. That was a really unique experience for me. And then, go ahead.
Do they have plans to like leave the platform up? Because I actually think that you could sell tickets to it right now. And because of all the speakers and vendors, I know I would, you know, pay if I just thought it was outstanding. I really did. My expectations were low and it blew away my expectations. So.
That's so wonderful. I'm pleased to hear that. The answer is all the presentations that were given are available till the end of October, end of this month, so the next 2 weeks, and then all of what we call the on-demand, which were pre-recorded, not classroom style. I mean, I guess almost all classroom style CEU credits, those are going to be through the end of the year. Nice. So they've got 3 more months to use that up.
Is there a way to download any of the content or no?
You know, I haven't tried that. I don't know. Okay.
Yeah. Love to. I actually think you could package it up and sell it as a kit to membership. I think it would be very useful.
So just
make a note,
just
pass that along to staff.
I was going to say, just to do a shameless plug here, because I want to switch gears a little bit. But I think for any listener that is out there, if you're not a member of your industry association, or if you're not engaging, you really are leaving a big piece of growth on the table, right? Because I mean, I know me personally, I have benefited greatly from being involved. I'm not too involved at a national level, but I've been very involved at the state level. And I mean, I still attend, all the events that, on the national side, and my business has certainly grown as a result of that. And so I think the take home from our conversation is that get engaged, take advantage of the resources. There's no point in reinventing the wheel. And I think anyone, including you, Scott, I mean, that has been involved, has ultimately grown their business as a result of it. So 100% Absolutely. Agree with that. Now let's switch gears a bit. Now let's talk a little bit more about your background. So in 2018, you had a company called Varmint Guard, and it was sold to Plunkett's.
Correct.
So kind of talk us through who your partners, why they want to sell, how many employees, just kind of give us a little background on that.
Okay. So Varmint Guard had grown to north of $7 million. We were a 50% residential and 50% commercial business, included termite, included wildlife. We, as you can tell by the Varmint Guard brand, that's where we started. And it continued to grow, but pest outgrew the wildlife side over time. My partners had family members in the business, and they wanted to they made a decision at that point. It was probably best not to pass it to the family members, which is, that's an unusual decision to be made. So we looked outside. We tried an ESOP and figured out, wow, that is really not returning the financial return to the equity owners as other alternatives would be. So that quickly got dismissed.
Can you just describe what that is for some listeners? Some listeners may not understand what an ESOP is, and so just so they know.
So the simplest answer is it is employee stock ownership. So basically, everybody in the company becomes a partial shareholder of the company, and so it is, in essence, every employee is an owner of the business.
And what was why was that not, was it just, it just wasn't return, like the return would not be good for the owners, or what was the?
Exactly. So from the employee point of view, they benefit greatly, right? They go from a person that just is earning a paycheck to somebody that has equity in the business and is now fundamentally involved in the growth of the business because they want in the long term to get value out of that. The second piece to the reason why it didn't work is, the current ownership, as you transition, has to go through banking to get collateral to pay the shares to the share to the shareholders. And the value that banks implement to private businesses is, and I'm just going to throw a number out, and I think everybody understands the multiple kind of figure. So the multiple for an ESOP is somewhere between 0.65 and 0.8, so under 1-to-1. And everybody knows that right now 1-to-1 multiple is not where we all are. We're a little above that. And then to go at that kind of a discount.
Slightly.
Right. It's a very complicated process, and it doesn't lend itself well to our industry in the current environment. We've explored it a few times, but I guess a lot of people who are selling now are looking at the big strategics, you know, the public companies, the private equity ones. And you were involved in Copesan, and I'm assuming that's how you forged your relationship with Plunkett's and whatnot. But what made you, did you go out to some of the bigger guys, or what made you go with, a regional company?
Sure. So let me start, because I know that we're going to have some listeners that are some of the big four. And absolutely, I do not want to make anything offensive here, because they're great companies and I love them. I love working with them. But for us, go back to history. My dad was in the industry, and in the 1990 roll-up of Waste Management, sold to the big player. And then what I've discovered, and it still holds true today, is that senior management is on board for about 30 days, and then you're let go. And I'm like, well, oh, hold on a second. I want a career. And they're like, fine, gone. So in our case, for my particular situation, I told my partners that I did not want to go with a public company, because I did not want to find myself unemployed after 30 days. I've heard it over and over again. My dad had it happen to him. Michael Botha had it happen to him. Numerous people in the current environment have had that happen as well. And it is not something that I wanted. So second piece to this is, well, all right, well, let's find an equitable partner that's about 4 to 5, maybe 6 times our size. And so I was looking at friends like Mike Rotler in St. Louis, and Chris McLeod and Stephanie in Chicago, and then Stacey O'Reilly up in Minneapolis. And it just happened to be that I was with Stacy in a Copesan event, and I'm like, well, can you and I chat off away from the ears, listening ears? And I just posed the question, would you be interested in buying a private business that has a portion of it being wildlife? Because history had told me 2 years earlier, she had me come up and teach her wildlife, because she wanted to get into wildlife for her business. And then after 4 days, I went home and she told me, thank you very much, but too much risk. I am not going to get into wildlife. So now why would I sell to her if she doesn't want wildlife? If we're going to literally buy the pest control side and then shut down the wildlife side, that's just not going to be a fit. Well, turned out she's like, well, if you run it, I'm fine with that. But I can't start it on my own, and I don't trust my own team to do it. We're single marketed focus on commercial services. We're 80 some percent commercial. I don't know how to do residential very well, let alone wildlife. So come on, bring it on. And so it was great. Literally, she and I sat across the table, created the, if you will, the story. And this is where the story takes a wonderful, unusual turn. I know that my partner really didn't want me to be leading the company in the long term. And I knew that was part of the give and take of our partnership. Is sometimes there's partnerships that work really well, and there was sometimes there was a struggle, and mine happened to be a struggle. And so it was like, all right, I have to find a way to let him lead. So I said, Stacy, you're going to have to initiate, and you're going to have to put this on the table. And we created the proposal together over that weekend. Over the weekend, I got a text from her. She said, connected with Jim. Jim loves it. I'll be flying out on Monday. And we signed the deal on Monday. Literally, she and I created overnight on a napkin. If you think it's not physically a napkin, but on a sheet of paper, we wrote it out. Here's what we're going to offer.
Back of a napkin.
Here you go. And literally had the deal done over the weekend. So that's the part I love is it's about relationships. Stacey and I grew up in the industry together. Her family and my family were best friends as we were growing up. Our businesses worked side by side in the Copesan network. We had collaborated on a number of kind of projects, if you will. So we knew each other backwards and forwards. So it was a good fit. I mean, another example is they had one office in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We had one office in Columbus, Ohio. We didn't have the branch and hub branch model of most businesses. We were technology forward. They were technology forward. So we were all digital, all paperless together. All those things just kind of fit. So I'll stop and let you ask.
So you never considered the big guys, never what got in front of them.
Correct.
And so let's get real private if you want to, if you will. Can a regional pay as much as one of the big boys? I mean, you know, that you address the valuations right now, you know, that we're as hot as ever. But it's private equity. It's the strategics that are driving it. Yep. Very few regionals are driving those kind of multiples.
So it's a very good question. And I think the simplest answer is this. No, private can't get to the same level. And I'll give you a couple of examples. My primary role in Plunkett's is M&A. So I do that every day, all day long, as more than 50% of my time every day is involved in that. And I've had a deal literally in the Minneapolis market space for a medium size, a couple of million dollar business. And the strategic players came in and we bid war back and forth. And finally, it got to the point where Stacey and I looked at each other and said, can't go any farther. And they won the deal. Now, I've had, it's like literally not every owner wants a strategic business. So yep. I have not been sitting on my thumbs and for the lack of activity. We're literally having an acquisition six times a year. So I'm still very active in it. I literally have them pop up all the time.
I also think what you just said is really important, right? Because it truly is based on your goals. I mean, in your case, when you sold, you not only got, obviously there's an equity transfer and there's a, you know, yep. some sort of liquidity transaction, but you also had a kind of a career, right? I mean, there's this That's fit right. that like this planet. Now, obviously if I'm 60 or like, I really want to get out, well, that may drive who I sell to, but certainly, I mean, I think you make a very good point. There's a much bigger picture than just the overall multiple, and that may look different in 10 years, right?
Sure.
I know for me personally, I'm asked this question to myself, I'm like, okay, if I do some liquidity event, okay, that's great. I'm 45 years old right now. What am I going to do with it? I don't want to put it, okay, so I'm going to invest it in the market with people that I don't know and investments that I don't understand. And nothing that I can control or right. And like in your case, I really like what you did is like, okay, now I'm part of another business and in an industry I understand I'm probably the most, you know, most knowledgeable person there is. Right. And now I'm somewhat in control of that, you know, of that. And so I don't know. I think it's pretty smart. I think if you're out there listening right now, you know, those are definitely considerations that you want to think about. It's not all about the numbers, right? What does it look like in 10, 20 years from an ROI, you know, I'm an investor, I've got to put this money somewhere. And what am I going to do? Because I know some people think it's great to go out and fish all day long, but I tend to think most entrepreneurs, they love that idea and sure. it lasts maybe a week, maybe a month at most.
Yep. So. Just to be clear though, you know, we do deals with lots of folks.
Sure.
Usually, so if you're the kid of an owner and the owner sells, there might be a place in management. When talking about the big guys, you're not going to write a multi-million dollar check to somebody, give them a job. As soon as the first bad day happens, what are they going to do, right? I don't need this, right? So right. It usually doesn't work out, but in some cases it does work out.
Oh, of course, right.
So you know, just to be clear on that. But I mean, I think that what you've done is outstanding, and there's also a whole community out there of people who want to sell their businesses, who have competed against the big guys their entire career, and over their dead body, they're not going to sell it to them. And those right. are the guys that the regionals and the smaller, the local guys can pick up, you know, and I think that that's pretty interesting.
The only other thing that I would kind of mention is the what we have found as a great differentiator is if you just bring the offer letter from a factual legal document to a more personal invitation of from a family business to a family business, here's who we are and here's how we operate. So this is what you can expect. It has floored so many of the operations that we literally, they talked to some of the other companies and are like, never mind. Whatever you just did, I want that secret sauce. Let me jump on board. And that's the fun part is this is a long game. So back to Simon Sinek's old adage of why. And the answer is this is not a 90-day cycle. This is about long-term growth and building a value. And the value is the people. It's the technicians. That's what it is. It's about getting everything that you can to help make the technician job the best.
So what are the pros and cons? So what we talked about the pros. What are the cons? If looking back on it, is there any things that you
there's got to be one.
Yeah. Oh, of course there is. This is not a panacea world. The simplest answer is this. And I'll tell you, in the first 6 months, when Stacy came and talked to me and said, Scott, we're hiring you. Your role is X. I didn't manage a single person. I went from running a business, managing in about 100 people, to managing nobody. And so I was like literally put on the bench. And the second statement was, I want you to listen and learn. I want you to integrate into my team, but I don't want you to voice your opinion yet. You carry a lot of weight in your team, and you'll potentially cause damage if you don't align with us. So align with us and speak from a single voice. It was hard as heck not to speak for 6 months.
Stacy's a very, very skilled manager. She's very, very good.
Absolutely. The fun part is I believed in everything that, so all the management style, the way the business is run, all I believed in it because I ran my business very similarly. So it wasn't hard. The hard part was just shutting up, not being the top dog. But I got past that. I had to reinvent myself, and I became okay with the fact that I'm an employee, and that's okay. I am who I am. I trust in myself. I can continue to grow, and I can continue to provide value to my current employer. And for that, there's this true passion for Stacy and I. We almost finished each other's sentences. It's been a wonderful ride. I would not change it in the world. It was the first 6 months that were just the hardest to kind of like watch and observe and not interject.
Well, I think that ego, no matter how it comes out, either as an owner or as an employee or whatever, and we all have it, right? It's always just managing it, being aware of it. And like you said, I think in your case, you were able to kind of put that in the back seat, and it's worked out quite well for you and for your business. And so very good, very good point there. 100% agree.
Yeah. So are there any cons to doing it? What are the, you know, what's the negative other than that? Is it,
interesting thing.
No matter who you work for, you're going to have to listen to your boss. But
absolutely. So from my perspective, I don't have any negatives. My employees don't have any negatives. They went from a pay and benefit package at level A, and of course, a company that is seven times our size. They're currently $70 million in revenue. oh my gosh, 10 times now what we were at the time. Better benefits package. So in essence, all the things that I was able to give them, they are getting far better in this new company. There isn't any pushback. Literally, everybody is pleased with the direction. That, so not only paying benefits, but where they can go. So that the other part is, as a small business, there's often, think of it as stratification. Well, there's a business owner and there's not much room for somebody else to move into that role. There, well, how many managers you can have? Well, you're going to try to limit that because you don't need more than one or maybe two managers of different types, office manager and field manager, those kind of things. Well, as the company grows, these give great opportunities for our staff to kind of grow from technician to supervisor, from supervisor into manager, and manager into key leadership roles. And we've just seen it over and over, it happen in our industry and in our particular company. So love that.
Yeah, so I think your story is terrific. I mean, you've learned to network through MPMA and get that through. And the neat thing about that is you can learn a lot. And as we get older and the new guys come in, they can learn from us, just like the folks who are ahead of us. And then you participated in Copesan and we're able to network at a really detailed level with Stacy, and so that's kind of defined where you're at. I just think it's an awesome story.
Cool. Well, Dan, I don't know about you, but I have very much enjoyed spending time with Scott. And Scott, very impressive story. Very excited to see what you're going to do at MPMA.
Fellow Air Force pilot.
I know. I remember you being a pilot, but for whatever reason, I had dropped the fact that I didn't realize you were an academy guy and that you actually flew the airplane I flew. So I already know you're a sharp nose kid. Anyway, but no, I am very impressed. Thank you for coming on our podcast.
Our pleasure. Love
really appreciate it.
A lot of info out of it. Any parting thoughts, Dan or Scott, before we close?
I'll let Dan lead.
I just really enjoyed our conversation here. And again, with, as far as Pest World goes, I just thought it was awesome.
Thank you.
You've already relayed it to the staff there, but if they haven't heard it, you can relay it again. I think it, hopefully it's a platform for not to replace it, an in-person one, but maybe they do it once a year, you know, in the summer or a different time. Hopefully they're thinking about that.
They are. I promise you that this is a new avenue for bringing those that can't. Well, think of it this way, per person. So airplane, hotel, food and lodging, you're roughly $2,500 for every trip you're going to make.
Easily.
And this is one of those things, much less expense. And you get the same value. So in essence, this adds a new dimension for those that are kind of in that tween stage that you were talking about. So north of $1 million, because they see value in it. And those that are $5 to $10 million that are growing, this is where they're like, okay, I can spend my money most wisely and get the most in my staff to see the breadth of this.
Yeah. Outstanding.
For sure.
Outstanding.
For sure.
Excellent.
All righty. Well, thanks everyone for another edition of PMP Industry Insiders. Hope that you found this session as useful as I did personally. And Scott, thank you again. Great having you on board. And
thanks so
we'll
much.
See you all next time. Take care now.
Excellent. Thanks, Scott.
Bye now.